information purposes only and are not necessarily those of CJAD 800 or Bell Media. The opinions do not constitute professional advice. Please contact your own renovation expert directly.
Walter Assey, president of Renovco, joins me, Joanne Brackus, for another edition of the Home Improvement Show. And it's going to be a busy one because we're going to be talking about the hurricanes. Text us, call us, 514-790-0800. Start sending in your questions to Walter, either via text or by the phone. The phone lines are open now. We're ready to take your calls. How are you, Walter?
I'm doing very good.
You just came back from Florida. And first thing I asked you when you walked into the studio was like, were you there during all of the Milton madness, Hurricane Milton?
Well, at first it was a complete waste of time because I got in for a project and I had to fly almost right out a couple of days later. I wasn't in the hurricane per se, but I saw all the preparation for it, which was the first time I actually see that.
And you were telling me that buildings and what they prepare.
I have to say, I tip my hat. I saw, hundreds of of Hydro Florida vehicles and vehicles from other hydro companies. People were bringing in generators and we ran out of gas at one point, and we had to look for a gas station because I was driving to my destination.
Oh no, did you see those airport. Big lineups?
Oh yeah, there was huge lineups. But I have to say they really prepare before. Like the couple of days before the hurricane hit, you could tell everybody is preparing. So,
they're used to it down there. We're less used to weather events. But one of the things I asked Walter before, because I was listening to a real estate agent talking about the fact that they sell a lot of different condos to a lot of Quebecers who retire down there.
Correct.
The snowbirds, yeah. And he was saying that the new thing is to sell these hurricane-proof buildings. And I thought, he's lying. You can hurricane-proof a building. Explain.
You definitely can. You definitely can. And that's a big part of the building code in Florida. It's a lot different than our building code here. So, for example, the windows, they have to be hurricane-proof. The weakest point in a home and during a hurricane or any big wind event is your windows. Because if the window blows in and all the wind comes in, that's how usually your roof gets detached from the house, and that's really the weakest point. So basically the way they do it is when they want to approve a window, it's really literally test by them shooting debris at the window, like 2x4s and all kind of things, to see if it's going to chatter. Because where you usually chatter beside the wind is all the debris that flies, right?
But is it it's bulletproof at that point?
Almost bulletproof. That's correct. That's what you want to call it. It's a thing. And then obviously there's a distinction between the concrete home versus the wood home, because concrete is way stronger. So any home that is made out of concrete, the insurance is a lot cheaper. They tend to have a lot of shutters in order to protect their glass from debris. So there are different ways of...
It's so interesting because I thought this was just a gimmick to sell to. I know that when we were leaving in Greece, the buildings are... Because there's quite a few earthquakes in Greece. They build them differently in different materials to sort of... when the earthquake hits, it hits, but at least things stay more solid. And for me, a hurricane is just everything's flying all over the place. So I can't imagine...
Yeah, that's correct. And you see, if you are there and you see the even hotels or restaurants that actually spend the money to hurricane-proof their establishments, just look at the size of the bolts when they have an awning or... Mm-hmm. It's crazy. You would think it's an overkill while you were there. It's like, oh my God, look what they're doing.
But then you saw it. You almost saw it.
Well, I almost saw it. But then you see the picture and you say, oh yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I would have done.
And then whatever. And sometimes we get the remnants and weather-wise up here in Montreal. 514-790-0800 is the phone line. Call us. Let Walter know what's on your mind in terms of your renovations, as well as the text line. We have a text coming in here. It says, hello, thank you for all of this information. We are in NDG and we have an oil furnace. Will we have to change it? Is there a date set when they will be banned? Bon weekend from Stuart.
So Stuart, the quick answer is you don't have to change it until a major component on it breaks down. So you can maintain it, you could use it until it dies. That's pretty much what the law is. The only worry is also the availability of parts, because obviously all the manufacturers now have stopped producing oil furnaces. It's normal. They're not allowed in Quebec. So on your own terms, Murphy's Law, usually when the furnace breaks down, it's the middle of February when it's minus 40 somehow. So yeah.
Oh, winter. But how much does it cost to replace, to change?
Depending on the size of the home and the brand that you pick. Obviously, there's different brands. The average cost is just for the furnace anywhere between 4,000 to 6,000.
And is there any government help to switch?
Oh, definitely there is. Definitely. They're not as interesting as they used to be like a year ago, mm-hmm. but there's still some incentives there for homeowners to switch.
Okay. Another question here about text. This is from Caroline or Caroline. Would love Walter to advise us on home power backup suggestions, EcoFlow systems, solar wind battery to last for days. Hydro is not reliable anymore. I'm in Hudson, no power. Yeah, we just got something from Vaudreuil and from Hudson that there's a power outage there.
You know what? It's funny that she says that, because I was thinking about it the other day. It rains, big rainstorm, we use hydro. Big snowstorm, we're losing hydro. Sunny days, sometimes we're losing hydro. So I'm actually questioning. I mean, maybe I'm looking too much into it, but she's kind of right in a way.
It's not reliable.
It's becoming unreliable. Our weather patterns are becoming unreliable. So anything that will help, you being independent from the grid will help, you know, whether it's solar panels, whether it's generators, whether it's whatever.
Talk to me about solar panels for a second, because there was pushback years ago that it was too costly and you
Correct.
Needed too many of them to actually Correct. Make an impact. In Europe, they're everywhere. Are we witnessing a kind of change here, or are people not on board?
So, I mean, one of the things you look at, like, for example, if you go to Florida, there's panels everywhere, solar mm-hmm. panels everywhere. Because hydro is expensive, so it makes sense. And it's sunny there 300 mm-hmm. days a year. We're unfortunately not that lucky in Quebec. So that would be one thing. The cost factor will take you about 26 to 27 years to get your investment back. So that
27,
makes it,
wait, correct. How much does it cost to sort of, if you're doing solar panels on a house, are you doing, first of all, the whole roof?
Well, I mean, you could do as many as you want.
Okay.
Based on what the solar panel calculations are for how much you want it to supply, 50%, 100%, what have you. Having said that, so from an investment perspective, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Is it that expensive?
It's usually anywhere between 25 to 35,000.
Wow.
Right? And what it brings you back is again, for you to pay back. Because to pay back, it takes you all that time. So you're doing it literally for your peace of mind, not for an economic reason.
Mm.
But in my opinion, that's where the government should really start kicking in incentives.
Yeah.
On a big level. Like
that's pricey.
It is pricey. So yeah, I mean, then you tell yourself, maybe I'll look at other alternatives.
What about wind? She asks about wind.
Again, it's a question of the cost factor. So what is it going to cost? And if the city is going to allow it? There's like many different questions to mm-hmm. ask about this, because not every, you know, where are we going to install it? And what is the size of the turbine, if that's what you're going with?
Is it effective?
Yeah, of course. It's very effective.
Okay.
It's very, very effective. In certain cases, there are literally cities that are powered by windmills.
Okay, and what is the EcoFlow systems that she's asking about?
From what I understand on EcoFlow I don't understand what she means by that, because from my understanding, the EcoFlow is a septic system.
Okay.
I could be wrong, though. I don't know what she means by that.
Okay. All right. So if you're going to invest in a backup, what do you, from all of them, in terms of alternatives?
I mean, it's hard to say, because even generators are not cheap, right? Even generator, the study that you have to do, the only difference between generator is, you know, you're going to have it when you're going to have it, if you have it. A solar panel, you have a few days of no sun. You know, there are certain, you know, like if I'm going to do solar panels, I will have battery packs, or the Tesla batteries, wall-mounted batteries, to kind of store energy, because that will be the proper way to do it. So there is a study to be made, you know, on a personal base, because the cost factor, if you want to power up your whole house, it's almost the same anyways.
Interesting. All right. 514-790-0800. That is the phone line. Call us. Ask Walter Assey, president of Renovco, your questions. We've got some texts coming in as well. This is the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Apologies if you were calling before 514-790-0800. There was a little glitch on my end. So I know we lost Alex as a caller. Alex, call back. I can see your call now. Send in those text messages. Call us. Don is on the line, and Don has has water infiltration in the basement. Don, can you hear us?
Yep, hear you fine.
Take it away.
Good morning. So, our favorite topic, water infiltration and mold and all that stuff that everybody seems to talk about. It's my in-laws' home. It's a fiveplex built in the early 70s. And in the basement, you have the foundation wall, and then you have like a bump out, right, of about, I don't know, 36 inches that separates a kitchen and a living room. In that bump out, there was probably the first 2 feet of it, the paint was flaking and the gyprock was really soft. So I decided to, you know, poke my finger through it today. And it's damp and there's some black mold there. So I'm a listener of the show, so I know when to stop and freak out. And so I guess my question is, because it's so close to the foundation, because I thought maybe there was a pipe that was in that wall that was leaking, but there's no pipe. There's just a couple of studs and some electrical. So does that mean that the source comes from the outside and leaking through probably a crack in the foundation wall? Or because it's a fiveplex, who knows where the water could be coming from?
So I'm going to give you a couple of tricks. Trick number one would be how high is the water coming from? Is it above ground level or below ground level? Mm-hmm. The reason I'm asking you this, Don, is because if it's above ground level, it's unlikely. It's possible, but it's highly unlikely that it's coming from there.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no hydrostatic pressure that could allow the water to come in. So usually it will take like a major event for that leak to become active.
Mm-hmm.
But on your regular like rainfall that is an average rainfall, is very rare that this would leak if it's above the ground level. So that's one way of kind of determining, is it coming from the foundation or above it. Now, in a case where your leak is close to the ceiling, for example, it's very highly likely it's coming from something above it, like bricks. You want to look at your brick pointing. When you say it's a bump out, though, I just want to clarify one thing. Is it like a separate, like a cold room?
No. It separates the kitchen from the living room. And the reason I say it's a bump out, it's just a wall, right? So it's perpendicular to the foundation.
Okay.
So it's just, you know, it's an empty wall. There's only two plugs on it. And it, you know, it sort of divides what the kitchen area is to what the living room is.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like an arch and you walk through that type of stuff.
So it's part of the foundation. Now, how
No, it's not part of the foundation. It's not part. So it's perpendicular. So it sticks out of the foundation.
Got it. Okay.
Into the home, yeah.
Okay, and then the wall where the foundation is is dry.
Is dry from what I can tell. I mean, you feel it differently, right? So it feels dry to the touch and you knock it and it definitely was not like the soft wall.
So above that room, do you have another apartment, I presume?
So above that room is one of their bedrooms, and there is an ensuite, but the ensuite is on the other side, and the plumbing goes in the other direction, so it's not coming from there. And above that, there are two apartments, but again, there's no plumbing, no bathrooms or sinks or anything.
What you're going to do is you're going to go to the outside, you're going to locate that wall.
Yeah.
Well, the wall that is closest or the area that's closest to it. And you're going to start looking at signs. Now, there are three, from the outside, there's four different places where the water could be coming from, or actually five in a case.
Yeah.
One of them would be the roof. highly unlikely because you would have had damages in the apartments above.
And the other floors, yeah.
And the other floors. The other one is the brick. The brick, if you have any issues with your brick pointing, so if you have a mortar that is deteriorating, that could be an area where the water is coming from. Mm. Window caulking is another. Mm. Ledges, window ledges is another as well.
You know what? That's probably it, because this is next to, it's about a foot from a window. So that's a good place to look at, the window caulking probably.
Window caulking, window ledges, these are often ignored and not looked at, but window ledges, when they crack, they can wreak havoc into a home.
Yeah, this doesn't have a window ledge because it's in the foundation wall.
Got it.
So but the caulking might be a source.
And then look for any cracks as well. I mean, while you're there, look at everything that is a possibility. Start with a visual inspection. And then if you don't, I mean, if you have a theory that is strong, then you could go with it to fix it. Yeah. But it's a good time to look at this whole area and fix every possible thing that needs fixing. So if a window caulking, even if it's not the cause that you see it, it's cracked, you need to do it, because sooner or later that it's going to start also leaking.
And if I may, so what last year, if you recall June of last year, there was some flooding. It was a big rainstorm and there was some flooding. And this house actually did flood. There was in the basement, probably by the time we got here, there was, I don't know, maybe a centimeter of water on the basement floor. So, you know, the insurance company, remediation company came, they took everything out, dehum, all that stuff. And then it was just a cleanup job. There was no construction repair that had to be done. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know, you know, what was the chicken and what was the egg. But maybe around that time, not sure, that's when perhaps we started seeing some softness in that wall. But now my question is it possible that, you know, 18 months later, the wall is still damp from a water event of 18 months ago?
It's very possible if the insulation got wet.
In this one there's no insulation because, again, it's inside the wall. So when I took it out, there's nothing, just studs and gibra.
Okay. To be wet, no.
No.
But I mean, the cavity could be very humid.
Yeah.
And that's what we underestimate. Like sometimes we touch something and say, okay, you know what? There's nothing. It's dry. The cavity is never technically dry because there's no air circulation that will allow it to dry. So it will take a long time to dry, and that long time invites the mold spores, and that's why you see the black mold right now. Is because you know, if this water would have happened, let's say, from the outside and went on the floor and you wiped it clean or you kind of dried it right away, then it's not going to be an issue. But if you same water goes in a subfloor, then it could wreak havoc in, you know, in the subfloor area.
Okay, Don, thank you so much for your call. 514-790-0800. Alex is on the line. We're going to get to Alex in just a few moments. Remember, send in your questions to Walter Assey on the text line or on the call line. We're laughing here. We're laughing. That's what you just heard. You heard me laughing. 514-790-0800. Welcome to the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renofco, and myself, Joanne Brackus. We are taking your questions. Call us. Text us. Alex has been waiting patiently on the line for you, Walter Assey. And Alex has a problem or a question about maintaining the water tank. Alex, can you hear us? Alex. Has Alex left the building? Alex has it's the second time Alex called. It's our fault. We've kept Alex waiting. Alex, if you're listening, call now. I promise we'll land. I promise. I mean, poor Alex is gone. Okay, there are questions on the text line here. It says, Walter, getting back to last week's show, you were talking about roofs. I remember this. How about a flat roof with a high quality white TPO? I'm including a rooftop deck on a new build as well. Will I save on energy and roofing costs with a TPO? Aren't shingles still considered a petrochemical product? That is why I'm choosing from my new build. Your thoughts. First of all, what's TPO for those of us who don't know?
It's a roofing system. It's usually used for flat roofs. It's a very good system, extremely efficient. The only idea with The only thing you want to be careful of is hire a contractor that is specialized in it, because it's very tricky with the installation. But it's an amazing, amazing product. Now, as far as talking about the maintenance of environmental footprint of shingles, I mean, yes, anything that we manufacture does have an environmental footprint. Now it's made of a fiberglass base. They used to, in the old days, they used to have it with tar and what have you, but because of the BP issue that happened and the recall, they improved the manufacturing of the shingles. So now it's, they're using different products, but yes, they do have
it's not as bad an as environmental, before, is what you're saying.
I mean, it's better made than before, but it does have an environmental footprint for sure.
Okay, finally, Alex, we have you back, Alex.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear us, Alex? Take it away.
Great, thanks. So my question is regarding the maintenance on the water heater tanks. I've been hearing about the importance of flushing it once a year. I've honestly never done it. And I'm just curious, what are the benefits of doing it, and what are the risks of not doing it?
So, first of all, there's many different things you have to do when you are maintaining a hot water tank. Depending on the age of the water tank, that also makes a difference. But flushing it yearly is a good practice. Tested the temperature pressure relief valve, that's also important. With time as well, when they get older, we always recommend that you replace the anode rod, or what you call the sacrificial weird smell. If that's the case, then in this case, you need to replace your sacrificial rod, it's called. Usually that happens, though, in areas where the water is very rich with clinker, or where you would have, for example, a well, like in Hudson and all these. So that's more common. As far as maintenance, that's pretty much where you're at. Flushing it just to keep the water quality going, pressure it's checked and verified. The sacrificial rod is really important to do in a case where you start smelling the hot water, and that's the only time that you would really need to deal with it, or if it's old enough. So if it's approaching, it's like 7-8 years, you might also want to look into replacing it as well.
Okay. And so the sacrificial rod, something that I can do, or does it have to be a specific technician?
To be honest with you, even certain plumbers are not even equipped to do. It's weird, okay. but it's this... some plumbers even don't know what it is. It's weird. I've worked with plumbers before, and you would, a lot of them do, but some of them are like, really, what is that? And then you have to educate them, and it's weird that they don't know about it.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I was doing a project for someone, and they were maintaining their hot water tank, and they were complaining about a smell, and I was there when their plumber came, and I told him, and he's like, what is that? And he didn't even have the tool to actually unscrew it to change it. And, he had to go buy one and come back. So that tells you something.
Yeah.
And when he did, and he pulled it out, and he saw how corroded it was, he was freaking out. So that's pretty much why we say, if the smell of the water, of the hot water in particular, starts giving this foul odor, or almost an eggy odor,
like
then
a
that's
sulfur.
It. That's right. That's a telltale sign that you need to change it.
So you're saying that a heater tank should be replaced every 8 years on average?
Every 10 years.
10 years,
so
okay.
Even insurance...
Yeah, 'cause I'm about 10 years now.
Yeah, no, 10 years is not really worth... to be honest with you, Alex, it could last you 15 years. But the only issue you have is that insurance companies oblige you to change it every 10 years. And if you don't, and you have a water damage because of that, then you might not be covered. So that's really the trick. It's not a question of how long they're going to last. And that's actually, I find that actually, to be quite frank with you, not very bright from insurance companies, because they are forcing the manufacturers to produce mediocre tanks. We can't go and necessarily buy a high-end tank that lasts you 30 years. The way I would have done it is I would have, you know, kind of get the manufacturer to give a warranty for their tank, and then if you have a water damage, are we beyond that warranty or not? You know, so 10 years, if you go with a higher end tank, you know, if you manufacture, you might not need to have it changed for maybe 20 years. But right now, this is how your policy is engineered. And that's why it's important that you change it every 10 years.
Because of the insurance, not the
That is correct.
Okay, so even if it's made great, you got
to
change it.
It doesn't matter because, again, the insurance wants you to change it once every 10 years.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for being patient because Alex had called many times. 514-790-0800. Send us your questions via text or call us. Get your questions in to Walter Assey. There's a question here about heating. Our heating is forced air. Are there electric systems that we can use, or do we need to switch to baseboard heaters for forced air?
Repeat the question again.
Our heating is forced air. This was related this is the person who had written into an oil furnace.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely do not switch to electric baseboard. That would not make sense.
Isn't that the thing that you hate?
I don't want to use
the H word, but you hate it.
I hate it.
Okay.
100%. You could use it all day long. if you have a forced air system, you have an oil furnace, you can change it to an electric furnace that does not require oil. And that's the way you want to go because that's a healthier system than the electric baseboards. And quite frankly, it's even going to probably even cost you cheaper. Because for you to run electric wires, you get heated baseboard heaters. So there's going to be a lot of domino effect to going with electric baseboards. Plus, it's really unhealthy. Okay.
I have a question, because you always say it dries the air. But if you're in a basement that's humid, would it make sense to you then use a baseboard?
That's a great question. And well, in the winter, humidity is not a big issue in basement.
Okay.
It is an issue, but it's not as big. Mm. It's really in summer where we suffer from basement humidity, if you think about it.
And you're not turning on the heat, so.
That's right. So, I mean, it's air conditioning what's really going to happen. That's why it was going to be my next point. When you have the furnace or the pushed air system, you can always install a heat pump and can have a air conditioning, and you can have even heat in the winter up to minus 30. So there is also a saving money component that would have to be calculated.
Mm.
It will be cheaper. Mm-hmm. So if you have a heat pump versus having electric baseboards everywhere in the house, you're going to pay less money by having a heat pump than having all these baseboards.
And you do. Walter does not like these baseboards. He hates them.
Yeah, so okay. I mean, it's health, it's money, it's looks, it's efficiency. It's
and it's keeping Walter Assey happy. All right, call us, text us, 514-790-0800. Walter Assey is taking your questions. 514-790-0800. Call Walter Assey, president of Renofco, with your questions for all of your home improvement needs, or text us. We have Clifton, who is on the line. Clifton, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning.
Take it away.
I have a Sensei thermostat, intelligent thermostat, and what happens is the thermostat is stuck to 50, and it doesn't move, so I can't get my thermostat to come on.
Heat. Okay, so what is your question?
My question is, how do I fix the problem? Like, it stays at 50, I can't...
Stuck at 50, he says.
What kind of... is it for a furnace, or it's for a convector, or it's for what?
It's electric furnace.
It's electric furnace with air conditioning.
Okay. And did you change the setting on your thermostat? Meaning, what is it on command for right now? Is it heating, cooling?
I have it on heating. I tried many things. I tried to put it on cooling, heating.
Did you try emergency heat?
I didn't see an emergency heat on my app.
There should be a function for emergency heat. If that doesn't work, it's probably... it's probably the thermostat itself. Have you tried to manually work with a thermostat, or you're just doing it through your phone?
Just manually.
No,
I'm doing it through my app.
And manual.
Okay. I like the fact that she's prompting you in the back.
Clifton, is that your wife in the background?
Yes.
Okay, the dream team. What's going on?
So, yeah, Clifton, it's probably your thermostat the issue. You either need to replace it or to check the connections.
It's 2 years old.
I know. Sometimes, you know, too much technology is not that great.
Would it still be under warranty?
2 years is probably not under warranty. Usually it's 1 year, the warranty. But what I would do is the thermostat only 2 years old, or your whole system is 2 years old?
The whole system is brand new. Well, put in 2 years ago.
So why don't you call your... why don't you call your service company that actually installed it and see what they could do for you? Maybe, you know, if they're decent enough, they might just come and switch it for you for free. Did the system come with a warranty, I presume?
Yes, but I don't have the number of the people.
Oh.
You don't know who did it for you, eh?
No, I didn't.
There's not an old bill somewhere, Clifton, with a number attached to it?
Because usually they, depending on the system you have, some of these systems are warranted for like 10 years. Depending on the warranty, it's maybe worth it for you to do that homework and see who actually did the work and call them and see.
I'm going to have to look in my files cabinet for that then. Like, there's nobody else I could call.
You could call any ventilation company, really, and they, you know, or even electricians. They can just swap the thermostat for you. It's not difficult to find a technician to do it. Just you have to pay for the service, obviously.
Good luck, Clifton, and to your wife as well. Thank you for calling. Okay, there was a question on the text line. We were talking about different kinds of energy before. We were talking about solar, wind, and someone wrote in about geothermal. Explain.
So a geothermal system is a good system only if you're going to stay in your home for more than, I would say, 7 to 10 years.
But what is it exactly? It's like
it's a system that uses the ground heat in order to help the cooling and the heating, and by doing so, it will decrease your electric bill for heating by 70%.
70.
That's right. And for cooling, by 50%.
Okay, so let's all get on board.
Yeah,
but so only for 5 years.
No. What I'm saying is, if you are not planning to stay in your home long term, it's not worth the front investment because it is an expensive system.
How much?
It's in the 25,000 to 40,000, depending on how big your home is.
40,000? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it is not a cheap system. It will save you a lot on the bills for sure. And if you're not really sure about what you're doing, it's not a good idea. So if you say, maybe I'm going to sell in 3 years, 4 years, whatever, then you're better off going with a very good quality heat pump that will give you up to minus 30 in heat. And that will be a more prudent, smarter way of doing it. If you say this, I'm going to die in this house, then yeah, for sure, it's a great...
But do you see this like a lot? Is this becoming more popular? Because you just said 70%. You know what?
There was a time that was becoming popular, but then... to be quite frank with you, it decreased recently because of the emergence of the very efficient heat pumps.
Mm.
So now it's kind of becoming more a balancing act. People that want to sell their homes, not sure what they're going to do in the next 5 years, they're saying, you know what, maybe I will just go with a heat pump. I won't go with that big investment because it's also a big job. There's, you know.
Remind me of the price of the heat pump.
So the heat pump is about 5,000.
Oh, wow. Big difference. Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's... again, it's a big difference depending on the size of the heat pump, of course, makes a difference as well. But usually, on average, it's 4,000 to 5,000. That's why I'm saying sometimes the geothermal, there's some thinking to do. What I would do is I would get the ventilation tech to give you a calculation and tell you what will your savings be with a heat pump that is very efficient, depending on the brand, versus a geothermal, versus the amount of years you're going to live in the house, and then make a decision that way.
We have a time for one last text message here. It says, I have an electric furnace and a heat pump. Is there a way to disable the emergency heat setting in furnace in the spring, summer, and fall? During the summer, the thermostat is set on cool. If by chance the outside temperature falls below 15 degrees and the house temperature raises above my AC setting, then my heat pump will not engage, and instead my emergency heat kicks in and starts to heat the house endlessly. I wake up to a house that's 26 degrees or higher. Help.
Okay, well, that doesn't make sense. If you are on a cool setting, emergency heat should not
kick in. Is that a problem with the settings?
So maybe the problem either with the settings or the program problem was the programming. If you did a program. Or it could be a problem with the thermostat. If you have it on a cool setting, technically your heat should not kick in and under
any
circumstances.
They're two different planets.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So I would definitely check the program if there's something in it that was programmed wrong, or check the thermostat itself. There's something that's not right there.
Okay, well, good luck, because waking up to a house 26 degrees or higher when you're set on cool is not good. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, it's always a pleasure.
It's likewise.
All right, and we'll be back next week. Remember, Walter Assey is here to answer all of your home improvement needs.